If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself The Wire. A The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you once again for tuning in to the world's only The Wire podcast. The Wire, a show about phone sex. That's what I got this week. Make sure to give us 5 stars in review on all the Apple podcast stores that exist, like the Spotify one or Overcast if they have stars. I don't know, Pocket Casts. All right, today Vince and I are going to be talking about, from season 1 of The Wire, episode 9, Game Day. And our guest this week, fantastic guest. He is a comedy writer. He's the host of the podcast Football Friends Who Are Gambling, and you know him probably from one of his many great tweets, which is how I know him, because I read a lot of tweets. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, our guest today is Cullen Crawford.
Hello, I'm excited to talk about basketball and dollhouse furniture. Yeah. My two favorite things.
Hell yeah, dog. This is,
things I love in this world. It's sports and making tiny furniture for dolls.
You know, it does look like a good way to make money, being that like Lester Freeman is like literally a cop and they have like unions, mm-hmm. and I assume great benefits and money. And if he is deciding I'm also going to have this side gig, it says to me that we should all be making dollhouse miniatures. Yeah,
absolutely. I think another cop at one point is like, he makes tons of money on the dollhouse furniture.
Yeah. I mean, he could like be a double union guy. I'm sure there's like a miniature carpenters union for tiny furniture. He might have to get Lena Dunham's permission to be in the tiny furniture union, but yeah.
I like the idea of like a hard-boiled furniture union man. <He's> like, when they tried to strike bust us. I used to break Scab's ankles with miniature baseball bats.
Yeah, I love the idea of like a little tiny mini guild where they all meet up inside the dollhouse.
You better not even look at a Louis XIV style dresser. If I see a goddamn armoire.
Just a little mini Jimmy Hoffa. And then like a mini mafia that like kills him and puts him in cement. Yeah. That'd be sick.
A tiny, tiny coffin.
Yeah. So Colin, do you like The Wire?
I love The Wire. Everyone loves The Wire, and I also love The Wire.
Yeah, it's a good show. But do you have like a favorite character? Is there someone you particularly love?
I was thinking about this, and this episode made me realize like this is Prop Joe's first episode.
Yes, that's right.
And I fucking love Prop Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think we can get into it later if you want, but like, I think he is the perfect mix. Like, he's got the perfect philosophy for this world, which is like,
yeah,
right between Stringer
and Avon.
Avon. Like, yeah. He's a little bit like, it's just a business. Why can't we just sell? And also like, well, if you fuck with me, I have to have you killed.
Yeah.
And he like balances it well.
Yeah. He's like, he's amazing in that. Like, he is this like badass gangster, like, you know that just because, well, he runs the entire East Side, you know, drug game, so he's got to be badass. But the only times you ever really see him on the show is he's like wearing a full suit to try to look like Pat Riley during a basketball game as a coach, or you see him like repairing clocks and shit. Yeah. Like, he's got,
yeah, he knows how to do shit.
He's the,
yeah,
Lester Freeman of the drug world.
That's true.
Yes, that is true. And it makes him like badass in multiple ways, but also he has a catchphrase.
Yeah.
I mean, like, also, it's very, very super villain, which
also
I love.
Not, we can't overlook the fact that he's one of the few people on the show with a genuine Baltimore accent.
Yes. Mm. Yes, that's right. This
which
is all, like,
which
the
comes
beginning
through so much more now when I watch it than on my first two watches.
Yeah.
Also, to my memory, like, he juggles all the show's like certified badass psychopaths better, mm-hmm, than anyone. He's like dealing, yeah, with Omar and Brother Muzone.
Mm-hmm. His weird nephew Cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he really
Marlo.
He saves himself multiple times in the show. Like, he is able to he's able to stay on top even with all the like mishigas going on with the West Side like drug game. Like, he's just kind of, I'm just going to be, you know, in my place repairing my clocks. Like, good,
yeah,
for him.
Yeah.
Up until the end of the show, a show about the East Side would have been boring because he's just running it well.
Right. Yeah. He's running it efficiently and well, and everyone seems to be happy.
So, RIP Robert Chu. He died, mm-hmm, in 2013. He apparently worked with children's theater companies and was an acting, oh, yeah, coach for several of the young actors.
That's right.
Joining the show, including Snoop. And, mm-hmm, yeah.
That rules.
Yeah. Yeah. It, RIP to a real one. And also kind of cool that even his last name has a Baltimore accent in,
yep,
it, you know,
yeah,
like Chew. There's no way. Chew. I mean, that's just, yeah, he's a cool guy. I love it. Is there why do you like The Wire, Colin?
Oh boy. Well, you know, it really this is, I feel like the thing I always heard before, I avoided it for years because everyone's like, you gotta watch The Wire, gotta watch The Wire.
Yeah.
And you know, I am,
you're like, I'm a rebel. I'm not gonna watch The Wire. Fuck ye.
And like, I don't know, it's like all these white middle class people telling me to watch,
totally,
it, how realistic it was, and I was like, well, I don't need, you know,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Yeah.
And then I watched it, and it, I mean, I don't know if it's realistic or not, but it's like a fucking novel. It's like a Dickens novel or whatever, even though they make fun of that idea later. It's like, it's a slow burn. It's not like, I don't know. I just really liked how slow and but good it was.
Yeah. Well, what did you watch, like, while everyone was telling you to watch The Wire, what did you watch instead?
Just like, comedy. Just The Simpsons over and over again.
The Simpsons is kind of like The Wire in like various ways, actually. Well, this is not a show about The Simpsons. No, this is a show about The Wire. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Pod. Down in the hole. Pod. Down in the hole. Pod. Down in the hole. Pod. Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today, once again, we're talking about from season one of The Wire, episode 9, Game Day, which premiered on August 4th, 2002.
I have a question.
Yes.
What? How did you decide which one syllable word to replace with pod in Way Down in the Hole?
You know, Ed, listen, I've thought about this a lot because, you know, at one point I was like, well, what's the name of the podcast going to be? And the first one was Pod Down in a Hole. And then I was like, no, Way Down in a Pod. And then I was like, no, When You Pod Through the Garden. No, When You Walk Through the Pod Den. No. And then I eventually settled on Pod Yourself the Wire, which doesn't make any sense because that is from a Sopranos theme song. But yeah, you know, you just kind of, you know, you can't really force art, Colin. Art has to come naturally through trial and error. And I think we can all agree that song is art. Isn't that right? Isn't that right, Vince?
So much art. Art's really hard.
Art is hard. So what's the synopsis? Can you break us off a little piece of that, Vince?
The West Baltimore and East Baltimore projects clear out to have their yearly basketball game, aka the worst day of the year for Baltimore fiends.
Truly is. That is got to be the hardest day of the year. That's like a annual 9/11 where everyone who sells you drugs leaves and they all just watch basketball. That's got to suck.
Maybe it's the addicts all go eat Chinese food and go to the movie theater because it's so
Oh, shit. It's like the Jews on Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. That's beautiful. They're like, no, we don't really believe in basketball. So while everyone else is doing that, the movie theaters are empty. And then they just nod out in the theater. So what was happening at the time that this episode came out, Vince?
Yeah, that's right, Matt. You know, in order to evaluate art, we first need to have some context about when it was released and how it was released. And for that context, we go to I had a stroke.
And he's dead.
We go to a little something we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day.
Machine tells the tale, son.
That's
the
right.
News hole.
Yeah, tight little news hole.
Shrink my news hole.
My news hole.
You know, usually I go with a few important ones and then a little fun one at the end. I'm going to lead with the fun one this time. Ooh. Because I feel like not only is it kind of fun, isn't it? It's also a fun time capsule, but it's weirdly prophetic. So just bear with me here.
Okay.
This is from the New York Post. Former village bouncer may become next superhero.
What?
Bruce Willis has hung up his guns. Sly Stallone has gone too many rounds. Arnold Schwarzenegger won't be back as the Terminator. And Harrison Ford, who turned 60 in July, has only so much diving, leaping, punching, and shooting left in him.
All these guys still making
movies. Yeah. Literally, Bruce Willis only quit because he got dementia. Yeah. Like, this is so fucked up.
Which leaves the door open for the next action hero. Who will it be? Would you believe a former bouncer from the West Village? Vin Diesel, who brings a Gen X sense of rebellion to XXX, is as likely as any candidate.
What?
A likely candidate as any.
I hate brands. That's the thing about me, XXX. I fucking hate brands and I'll never sell out.
That's his catchphrase, right?
Diesel may get criticized for an unpolished performance in the new big budget action flick, but he exudes the calm confidence required of any butt kicking He-Man.
Can't even say he gave a good performance in this review about how he's about to be a movie star.
In this thing about how he's going to be the next big thing, they're still like, well, he did. I mean, it was a dog shit acting part, but I mean,
he might not be
good.
Any good, but he doesn't seem scared.
He's really not afraid to be as shitty as he is, which is admirable, some would say. In all likelihood, we'll be seeing his high-flying stunts as government agent Xander Cage for years to come. Besides, what's the competition? Ben Affleck, who underwhelmed critics in this year's The Sum of All Fears, doesn't seem to have the charisma or sheer on-screen forcefulness to carry the mantle.
Yeah, yeah. Ben Affleck is over for sure. I think he's right about that.
Will Smith, who got an Oscar nomination for last year's Ali, has a new hit with Men in Black 2, but he's indicated he wants to take on more serious roles.
And you know what? He has, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, he had that one where he played the dad.
There's a few more in here, but here's where it gets prophetic. Diesel's strongest competitor is probably The Rock, the ex-wrestler whose breakout film, The Scorpion King, did nearly $100 million at the box office this summer. The two are quite similar in style and appearance. Dark, muscle-bound, and athletic.
Is getting problematic.
They each wear their hair short or shorn, and both have had big screen personas. Both have big screen personas that audiences seem to love.
It's not bald, beefy mulattoes are vying for the number one action hero spot. I love the post because they don't hide their racism all that much. They just kind of go for it, and you got to respect a true racist. Go on.
It's not surprising then that they hang out together. A photographer caught the duo at an NBA playoff game this summer in LA. So how long before they duke it out on screen?
Oh boy.
Well, how long before they duke it out off screen is the real question.
Hey, he got
this
a
is
lot
maybe
of-
the article too, because it said this started the whole thing because it said that they have the same physique and Vin is like, yep, I'm the same as The Rock.
Yeah.
I have to have the same punches as him.
Mm-hmm. If there's one thing that people know about me is I'm very charismatic. I'm very good at doing jokes. And
I'm almost 7 feet tall.
Almost 7 feet tall. And I could probably pass as Samoan. Is he Samoan? He's Filipino, right?
Vin
I forget
Diesel?
What.
I think
no,
I
The Rock.
Oh, The Rock
Diesel
is
comes from
the Brock yeah, Diesel. Is Samoan. Yes.
I don't know the etymology.
The etymology of Diesel.
He's part truck.
Stupid.
All right, other stories.
Hey, Park truck.
going more serious, President Bush signed a major corporate fraud bill on Tuesday, just 3 weeks after the White House had opposed central provisions of the legislation.
Mm.
But the business scandals have shaken the administration, and the president has recently cast himself as the protector of the worker and small investor.
Absolutely.
No more easy money for corporate criminals, just hard time, Mr. Bush vowed as he signed the measure in a White House ceremony.
Yes.
Thank God that happened. Remember when we used to have corporate corruption?
Yeah, dude. And then George W. Bush came along and famously advocated for the working man.
Yeah. So good thing that's not a thing. There won't be any other other financial scandals
corporate
or problems.
Corporate malfeasance is over, just like Ben Affleck's career.
Yeah, sorry. Did I not say the date? We're going all the way back to August 4th, 2002. Yeah.
2002.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. Nothing really going on news-wise at the time.
Other news. Here's a good time capsule for you. America Online plans to introduce the 8.0 version of its software.
Good.
Here are some of the features it hopes will stem defections by its members. One, automatic redial. If a user is disconnected, the software will redial AOL without the user losing his or her place.
Oh, that's sick. Good. Do they have a thing where you can tell if someone's lying in a chat room about being a girl?
we'll find out. Match chat. Users indicate their interests in advance. Golf, Madonna, whatever. When a dozen people come online with the same interests, they will be invited to an impromptu chat room. Hell yeah, dude.
Fun.
Yeah,
fun,
you guys
fun.
Like Madonna, right? Why don't you help?
Yeah.
Madonna, whatever.
You guys all like golf and Madonna? Talk together.
Unfortunately, we've only figured out golf and Madonna so far.
Yeah. Those are the two categories we know.
Choice of welcome screens. The opening screen of AOL is seen 70 million times a day. Now users may pick from 6 versions with varying emphases. Stock quotes for investors and executives. Music news for teenagers.
The only people who like me.
Yes.
Online caller ID. For an extra fee, a dial-up user can be alerted if someone is calling, giving the user the option to disconnect and take the call or to send the call to voicemail. Next year, AOL will introduce a message service that sends voicemail to the computer and email to a phone line.
Good luck. Good luck with that. I love it. It seems like they're really on the cutting edge of technology here.
Yeah, yeah.
The iPhone is 2 years away, a year away.
It's pretty. It's like,
what was the iPhone?
2006. No, I guess like 4 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, they've got a little while before they completely crash and burn. Although, is AOL Time Warner still a thing? Does that exist?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I believe so.
So AOL is still up in the name, huh?
Yeah.
Good for them. You got to really, you know. You gotta hand it to them. It's
Prodigy,
like,
Comcast. Yeah, it's quite a coup to get that in there.
Yeah, they just stuck around. No one uses it, but they're around.
Yeah. And then lastly, this is something that's come up on the show itself. Turnover hinders recasting of FBI. A steady stream of departures from the highest ranks of the FBI since September 11th has put newcomers in almost every top job.
Good.
The losses, including the announced departures of four senior executives in the last month, come as Director Robert S. Mueller is aggressively trying to reorganize.
It's Mueller time, baby.
Yeah, baby. Mueller time has begun.
Yes. Lock him up.
Aggressively trying to reorganize the sprawling organization, which is trying to recover from spying and management scandals. And accusations that it missed clues in the September 11th attacks. Basically, they're trying to turn their focus to counterterrorism, and people are like, hey, what the fuck? What about the
and
other
everyone's
stuff?
Leaving.
I'm out of here.
And Mueller is like, trust me, this is, we're gonna do it good this time.
Yeah.
You know, no more
if we play
of this,
this right,
pro.
I could get my own forgotten Showtime series one day.
Yeah, Jeff Daniels could play me. Wait, no, that was Comey.
That was the Comey role, but what's the difference, really?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know the difference.
I don't either. We'll need it. We'll have to appoint a special master to figure that one out.
Yes, yes. Mueller has to cast himself.
Maybe the congressional parliamentarian or other things that were just...
Yeah, the things I've had to learn what they are.
Other fun things that we're supposed to know. Ugh. You know, being an informed electorate is not all it's cracked up to be.
Nope. But luckily, we have The Wire.
Thank God for The Wire. So that's what was going on. The FBI was switching to counterterrorism. Vin Diesel was going to be the number one action star and kind of became that. And the middle story, I forgot. Right. It was something.
Telecommunications.
Yeah, telecoms and George W. Bush figuring out, being an advocate for the working man. So that's what was happening.
Okay.
And so to get into this episode, first, gonna do a little bit of the Balmer B stories, which is my musical version of the synopsis. Sorry, Colin. this is based on the song The Game by Queen.
Oh, hell yeah.
Avon makes a bet with his rival, Prop Joe. Avon wags his finger like Dikembe Mutombo. Daniel's nice try. Avon's hard to get. Lester Freeman follows the money and not the drugs. Play the game. Everybody play the game of drugs. And, just this part.
Everyone wants to suck my dick.
I have to play something for you guys. I promise the listeners. I did it right before, literally right before the episode started. Listen, I got a baby coming, and I just keep having to go to the fucking OB, and obstetrician appointments take a while, so. Anyways, the poll quote for this episode is, maybe we won, Herc. And my poll quote is, you gonna look like a glazed donut, Poot. getting into this episode, just real, real quick. I would say that this is kind of an episode. It's called Game Day, and this is an episode where everyone's running game. I feel like everyone is kind of in their like peak game zone. I mean, you know, you have Avon and Prop Joe having a literal intramural projects basketball game, and both are running game on each other, with using ringers in order to try to win. Freeman is he's running game by, you know, doing what he does best, which is following the money and assets, as well as running game on Chardine in that I think he's trying to smash. Bubbles runs magnificent game with this caper with a fishing hook.
Yep.
And only to find that he himself got played. Then you have Carve and Herc deciding not to run game and accidentally playing themselves. Omar's game is ruined by cheese fries. Wallace runs game on D. D gives him some money and uses it to buy drugs. And finally, Poot's phone sex game is unparalleled. So those are the things that happen. General thoughts. What do we think of this episode, Vince?
Yeah, you know, I thought this was a real lunch pail episode of The Wire. You know, like,
sure,
sometimes it's not about, you know, flashy scenes or transcendent acting. Sometimes it's just about grit, just showing up to your TV show, doing your job over and over again. And that's this episode. I felt like this was
like
a real,
it did the job.
This is a real coach's son, like, of a television episode. You
a
know?
Bit of a filler episode in that the main, like, plot driving thing of the show is like, we're going to take a day off and not do that.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah. Yeah, true. That is true. Yeah. What did you think, like, the to me, the episode stood out as not iconic, but like it stood out to me because of the basketball game. It was like one of those an episode which I've been kind of waiting to get to. And I did find that my memory kind of. In my memory, there was more basketball game that happened than actually did happen in this episode. There's most of the episode is actually spent with Freeman explaining how to follow assets and money, which I thought
which I
was
couldn't
like,
follow
oh,
at
yeah.
all, by the way. I was slow. This is like when someone reads like the instructions of a board game and it just completely washes over your brain. Like
it's stressful. I'm like, You're talking to cops, and no one's like, hey, you have to say that again.
Yeah. I was thinking about Presbyluski's face in that scene when he's like, when Freeman is trying to explain what both he, what Sidner and Presbyluski are going to do, you feel like music just kind of playing in his head.
Yeah. You're going to keep your head in this assessment book. Look up any properties that you can connect to Barksdale. How do you know it connects to Barksdale, right? For one thing, you work off of what Prez gets you from the corporate charter documents. Whatever companies he links to Barksdale or people connected to Barksdale, you look for those companies in the city land record. McNulty says that you heard that Barksdale. Sometimes people make a war. See if there's anything owned by the end of Barksdale. If you find something,
it's like a scavenger hunt.
And then he says it's like a scavenger hunt, which is like, at that point, Freeman should have just went, okay, he's not listening.
It's like a massive,
right, let me try this again.
It's like a massive decision tree where like he's trying to explain it simply, but every single step of it requires like a further digression. It's like he's trying to explain like an NFL fucking option play to a Pop Warner quarterback where it's like,
so
okay,
when the safeties cheat up and that means
if the safeties are deep, what you want to do is look to the receiver and it's like, then I throw it to him. No, because see, then you have to decide if he sees his man go left, he's gonna break it off to the, and you're like, what the fuck? I'm completely
lost. It's like a Rubik's Cube. Just I love that with Presbyluski, we now have like a little bit more insight. We keep getting these little nuggets, like when he figured out how to break the phone code, he mentions that he likes puzzles because he does a lot of word search puzzles.
Oh my god.
Which are not not a thing you get outside of a children's menu at a Tony Roma's. And then now, you know, he's like, oh, it's like a scavenger hunt. Oh, it's like Easter egg.
Yeah, oh, just like capture the flag.
He's like, he's like, capture a flag. Oh, it's Red Rover, let Avon come over. Just like peak stupid idiot.
Here's on the wire because I play a lot of Number Munchers.
Okay, I can find all these apartments because I played a lot of Butts Up when I was in junior high.
Yeah.
He's the wildest character. Like,
yes.
He also shot his own car and his fire. Like, he does not have that personality type, really.
Yeah, it's great that they go this whole show without ever really explaining to you why he shot his own car.
Yeah. But you can kind of assume. I feel like what...
Like, he left it in drive or something, and then it rolled away, and then he had to shoot it to pretend that someone stole it or something.
He tried to stop it by shooting.
Yes, he had to shoot his car in order to get out of some mistake. Yeah. Like, he fucked up. He got
He left it in drive, and it was about to run him over, and he had to like shoot the block, the engine block.
Like, the show changes its mind about him. Like, he is like, at first he's the hothead, and then he's like, whatever. He's dumb, and then he's like a puzzle master, and then he's a caring teacher. Like, it's like all over the place.
No, I think I get it. Like, I think there is some unity to it. I think they're trying to say that he was just this this like sort of nerdy guy whose father-in-law is like a police police captain. So he tried to become a gun guy, and he tried to become a car guy, and he tried to become like a tough policeman who beats the shit out of anyone who looks at him sideways. But he's just, he's inherently kind of a pussy, so he's not any of those things. So of course he becomes like the worst kind of bully, because he is like, he's like a guy who's homophobic but also gay. Where he's like, you know, he's trying to show off to,
he's overcompensating, clearly.
Yes.
And that's probably true of the majority of cops, you know, like that represents a lot of policemen who are like in the job because they are overcompensating.
I mean, if you watch
Philando
Castile got shot, like that guy was having a fucking panic freak out. Like, it wasn't like, it was just, he just had a fucking, like, I don't know. He was just freakishly, he was like paralyzed by being scared of whatever he thought was going to happen there.
Right. And you watch a lot of these like cop murder videos where they're just like killing unarmed people, and you see, you hear the panic attack they are having in being put in a situation, which I would say is like a situation they shouldn't necessarily be in the first place, but also just like a situation where you'd feel like, I don't know, isn't this, it's a stop. Isn't this normal? Why are you scared right now?
Yeah.
And if you're scared, maybe this shouldn't be the job for you, but that's exactly why they take the job.
Yeah. That reminds me of my favorite cop moment in this episode is when Kirk and Carver are watching the basketball game, and Carver's like, who's like the favorite? And they're like, the East Side's won the last 2 years. And he goes, my boys. And it's like, these are the guys that you beat the shit out of constantly. And like, when you're just like, oh yeah, these are my guys.
No, I love that. Cause like the, Kirk and Carve and Bodie and, Poot are sort of like the Wile E. Coyote and Sheepdog of The Wire, where it's like you see them pass each other in the hall and they're like, morning, Sam. Morning, Bill. And then they have to hit the time clock, and then suddenly they have to like
womp
each other a few times.
But
and
just
then,
like having pride in this community you don't live in and just actively terrorize.
Yeah, you actively victimize on a regular basis and just being like, you know, that's where I come from. It's like, that's worse, dude.
Yeah.
You come
and
from
I don't
here.
Know that. I don't know what the show thinks about that moment, but to me, that is like a perfect pop satire.
I've decided not to parse what the show thinks about anything, only what feels right, you know? Because every time someone tries to parse it, then David Simon will go on a rant on Twitter, and I'll be like, well, I don't know what he thinks about stuff, but I'll tell you what I think about it. By the way, David Simon, if you're listening, please come on the show.
Come on the show.
Come on. Lunch pail episode. I thought very good.
Enjoyable. This is sort of like the Wire's version of the Sopranos Columbus Day episode. It's kind of like it's a one off. It's kind of a bridge to somewhere else, but it kind of stands alone. It, you know,
it's about some like cultural signifiers for these people.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. And you know, so we'll start with the Freeman acid chase, just to get out of the way, this segment of the episode, this arc is called Freeman Chases Ass/Assets. And so we start like we played before with him explaining exactly how they're gonna go about getting, you know, all of the Barksdale's like physical assets, how they're gonna trace it back to him, getting all the names of the lawyers and whatnot, and then also trying to see where this corporate money goes after, you know, after it's sent out, and finding out that, oh, it's going to people like Senator Clay Davis and whatnot.
You follow drugs, you get drug addicts and drug dealers. But you start to follow the money, and you don't know where the fuck it's gonna take you.
We're running around on this. What are you gonna do?
You need something?
Yeah, let me get the campaign financial reports for Western districts, and actually any citywide race.
You want quarterly reports or individual donor lists?
Oh, please.
It'll be a couple hundred pages.
Really? I'll take all of it.
Which, for me, as I was watching that Freeman scene, I was thinking to myself, like, kind of like, fuck yeah, this is what real police work looks like. And then kind of realizing, well, no, it's kind of what we wish it looked like, but this is actually just what journalism looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Realizing that it was a little bit, I don't know, projection maybe on David Simon's part, and maybe
definitely feels like the guys who did the what do you call it, not the pen, what was the other one, the Panama
the
papers.
Panama papers,
yeah. Jeez. It looks like what they're doing. It's like, I don't like think the cops were doing this,
right?
Yeah.
it's exactly right. It's what they wish cops were doing. And I know that, like, Ed Burns and David Simon apparently fought a lot in the writer's room. They got in screaming matches, and I'm trying to imagine if one of the things that they got mad about was like Ed Burns being like, no, cops are not this smart, they wouldn't do this. And then David Simon being like, but they should, and it's cool. So
it's protection on both sides of this story, of protection, because mm-hmm. they're also like, I bet Chardine, the exotic dancer, would leave the young, handsome drug dealer for yeah. a bookish 60-year-old.
Yeah, who makes dollhouse furniture. Yeah.
I mean, to me, it does make sense that, like, the stripper would leave for, like, the older man in a sweater vest who, like, has a lucrative side gig making doll furniture.
He is literally wearing, like, the superhero outfit of a Captain's Save-A-Ho. You know what I mean? Like, that's yeah. that is what he just needs, a big S on his chest with the sweater vest. But yeah, so Freeman is like, he's going to the Board of Elections, he's getting all the campaign finance reports, all this good shit. And then we get into them trying to flip Chardine. So Freeman and Kima basically jack her up the way they would jack anyone up, except they don't have a charge or nothing. They just go up to her and go, hey, we're the police, you got to go downtown. And Chardine, being a citizen, is like, okay. And so Chardine immediately, like, where we see the scene where Chardine is looking at the dollhouse miniatures and is kind of horny for them.
The toy furniture is great.
Dollhouse miniatures.
My sister had a dollhouse when we were young, but nothing as nice as these, can I?
Sure.
Do you have a house for them?
No, I just make them and sell them.
That seems kind of sad. Should have a house for him.
Which I kind of love in a way, because there is something about Chardine that is I don't know, where I think it's like they wrote a character who would like that, you know what I mean? Because I feel like most of the strippers at Orlando's would be like, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
And why do I have to sit here and watch you make dollhouse furniture? And instead they were like, nah, let's make her low-key fall in love with
him. Maybe Lester and her have a giganticism fetish where like, he wants her to be a giant who smashes him and all her furniture and everything.
Yeah. I want you to call me a little boy. Please. It's what I like. So in order to flip Chardine, they decide that they are going to not just show the pictures of her dead stripper friend Keisha, but Kima's like, nah, I want to do better than that. And they take her to the coroner's to show dead Keisha in a gurney. And too far, I think. Don't think they needed all that. And they like really go in deep. And I have a clip of them talking to her about Keisha.
Found nude Monday morning in a dumpster off Reisterstown Road above Northern. Toxicology is positive for heroin and cocaine.
In a dumpster.
Rolled up in a rug.
She overdosed, and whoever was with her didn't do shit but roll her up and throw her away. Because that's how they do.
Positive for semen in vaginal, anal, and oral cavities.
All right.
Three different blood types, all secretors.
They fucked secretors. And threw away.
I mean, at this point, I'm like, the coroner coming back and like, oh, I have some more information. Yeah. I have a, hold on. Also, there was cum everywhere.
He was just itching to say it.
He was itching to say it, right?
Positive for semen, vaginal, semen, anal, semen, anal, 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 semen, cocaine.
They're like, Dave, not now. We've already got her point across.
We got her, Dave.
I have
we
this brain it. Scan that shows she was very sad when she died. She was thinking about sad things.
It's like so over the top. They do not need to keep this going. It's like, all right, well, I have a copy of her diary in which she says all of the things that make her cry.
Also, it works in the show, but it's maybe not the best strategy to be like, human life is nothing to these people. They will kill you for nothing. You're going to go undercover with a microphone.
Yeah. Do you feel safe? But don't worry, we'll protect you. Sure, you make dollhouse furniture, motherfucker.
She tested positive for dookie under her fingernails. I'm not...
What is secretors? What does that mean?
It's like... certain people who get slough DNA in a way that other people don't, and they're called secretors. I forget the exact science behind it. It might have been discredited by now, but secretor status refers to the presence or absence of water soluble ABO blood group antigens in a person's bodily fluid.
So this guy's just showing off. All right,
now he's just he's saying extra shit. People like, doesn't know what
secretor sounds bad. I'm gonna toss it in there.
So Chardine is seeing the body and distraught. And at that point, she is mad at D because D'Angelo, her boyfriend, had basically said, we took her to the hospital and tried to save her. And it's clear that he's lying. And when Freeman is talking to Chardine about dating D'Angelo, Chardine says something along the lines of like, do you know him? And Freeman goes, I feel like I do now.
D'Angelo, huh?
You know him?
At this point, it feels like I do.
We sort of moved in together. He seemed like he was different.
Which is like throwing shade at D in a way that it's like, yeah, I think I know who your boyfriend is. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about dating someone a little bit older, someone like dollhouse furniture or something? And then they had this great scene between Chardine.
See, I thought
and
he was
D.
saying that more like you would say about like a sitcom cast, where it's like we've invited them into our living rooms for the past 7 years.
It could be that. It could be that. I thought about that as well, but then I realized no, it rings more true that he's throwing extra shade at D.
Mm-hmm. To be like, this is who he really is.
This is who he really is, Chardine. And you need to leave him, you know?
Of course.
Have you ever thought about dating a good guy? I like to think of Lester as sort of low-key incel vibes because he does make, dollhouse miniatures and he's a cop and he's like good at puzzles. So like part of me thinks he's just like, all these girls, they just want a bad boy, but I'm a good guy. I'm so good. I'm going to show her dead friend to her and have a guy talk about cum.
I don't know that he's on the hunt yet. I think at this point if something comes of this, that's great, but I'm not going to force the issue yet.
I get the feeling that he's like, was immediately enamored by her and was like, damn, she's beautiful. But that's just me. But then Chardine breaks up with D in a fantastic scene between the both of them, in which D is trying to guess what she's mad about, which is, I think, this very relatable, almost like sitcom-esque moment that gets dark real soon.
Women, am I right?
Yeah. Well, what do you want to hear? I mean, it's always something wrong.
I promise you're hot.
Yeah.
What do I look like to you?
What do you mean?
What do I look like to you?
You look like a girl, a woman, a beautiful woman. You're fine. What?
I don't look like trash to you.
Baby, this ain't about what you do.
I don't look like something you could roll up in a rug and throw in the trash.
Chardine.
Totally got his ass. You got to hand it to her.
Mm.
Got his ass. I mean, like, you couldn't have scripted a better... I mean, it is scripted, but you know what I mean? Like, perfect.
Yeah.
That's how you do that.
Which is like, you know, obviously he runs with these people and they did that. But he wasn't, like, he just sort of had to do that, right? Like, they sort of told him, like, get rid of his body. Like,
you get the feeling that, like, I don't know, with D in that moment especially, there's just no way to explain. Like, listen, I know it's bad. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been really sad and traumatized for the last few weeks. Yeah. It's 'cause of that. Just if that makes it any better, but he knows he can't really. There's nothing you can say to, hey, you rolled up my friend in a rug and threw her in the trash. It's like, yeah, I know it sounds bad.
It was the best option we had at the time.
Yeah, but we had a rug and I was high. But yeah, so that's that storyline. Real quick, let's also get into the Bubbles storyline. He has a small arc here. This segment is called Bubbles, Bubbles, Toil, and Trouble. So Bubbles and Johnny are, they're in the pit. They're waiting for their yellow top testers. And we get to see Waylon again.
Love to see Waylon.
Yeah, Waylon, yeah, we met.
Steve Earle, baby.
Yeah, we met a couple episodes back, played by the wonderful Steve Earle, who really just like, I mean, perfect casting. He shines as this character. If you've ever been to any 12-step programs, especially Narcotics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, like old-timers, all look like Waylon. They are all like ex-junkie biker dudes who, like, you know, when they talk, you're like, oh, they seem so nice. I can't imagine them being like, you know, someone who stabbed someone one time. But they all have.
There's a certain breed of like sober guy that like, it feels like they've hit this like American guru status.
Yes.
Like, they're always kind of Southern and like,
yeah,
they'd be like, you could like, you know, spit on them. They're like, thank you, brother. For like nothing phases them.
Yes. Yes. They've literally seen everything. And because of that, like, yeah, they're not really phased by anything. And it makes them, yeah, kind of, there's something pseudo spiritual about it where you're just like, I don't understand you. You're so zen, but you look hostile. Like, these are two warring personalities. So Waylon is there, and Bubbles and Johnny both think that he's there to cop. And they're like, see, fucking, you know, NA is bullshit. And then there's this moment where Bodhi is, he's being mobbed by all of the fiends who want their free testers, and he just throws them all on the grass like it's fucking bird feed. And they all the fiends just like peck away. And I'm like, this is one of the darkest moments in the show that's not played for anything. It's not played for laughs. It's not played to be dark. It just is.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things about The Wire that I love is like, they don't do music, you know what I mean? They don't do like, there's not a background music, there's not a, there's no cues about how you should feel about this, so you can kind of interpret it any way you wanted. I thought it was very funny, but that's because I know what it feels like to desperately search the ground for drugs that have been dropped.
But I feel a little bit like, I know it's supposed to make Bodhi seem heartless, but like, he's trying to give them free drugs.
Yes.
He's just like, I agree. I don't know what to do. You guys are mobbing me.
I completely agree. There is part of me that was just like, Bodhi had no other choice here. I mean, this guy, he's giving you free vials. Like, what do you want? You know, meanwhile, I would definitely be the person, like the fiend in the back, who's like, well, if I act good enough and he notices, maybe he'll give me more free vials. Like, that's who I would be.
Dealer's pet.
Yes, I'm dealer's pet, exactly. Here's an apple. So then Bubbles, he ends up getting a bunch of testers, and he runs up to Waylon to be like, hey, you know, you want some extras? And Waylon admits that he's actually not there to cop. He's there to get his nephew off of the corner.
Trying to get my little nephew off the corner. His mama sent him up to Cumberland, you know. Try to keep him clean at my grandma's. He ain't anywhere near his bottom. Got to see that bottom coming up at him. Hard, too, because he's young, 24. Most people don't get tired till they're 35, 40. How old are you?
You're hot.
And it's another, you know, seed planted in Bubbles, in which it's like, hey, you know, some people actually can make this work. And Waylon says this thing where he's like, his nephew is not near his bottom yet. And that usually fiends get tired around 35 or 40. And he asks, how old are you? And
he goes, I thought that was a great fucking line. Like,
yeah. He says, young at heart. And then I started thinking about it. And I was like, wait, how old is Bubbles supposed to be? Like, do you have any idea?
Approaching 40, I would think.
I think yeah. he's in his mid to late 40s, but that might just be drugs are aging.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I know that the actor was probably much younger than we think, but I don't know how old he's supposed to be in that show. Because, yeah, like to look at him originally, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that guy's like approaching 50. But now that I think about it, I'm like, no, he might be 28. It's absolutely possible that he is 28 years old and just, you know, a life of drugs.
In season 4, he's in school with the kids.
He's like, I'm 16. Fuck. Oh, hey, Brent.
Hey, you said approaching 50. We're also approaching 50 minutes, so it's time to take a break for some ads.
Oh, it is time to do our ad break. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We have ads and we have mouths to feed. So please enjoy these words from our sponsors.
Summertime and the living is thirsty. Again. Once again, I've done that joke. And once again, it's a great joke.
Very funny, Matt.
Thank you.
But you're right. It is summer. And during the summer, I love to keep Fiji water on hand to keep my family and me hydrated and refreshed.
Here's the thing about Fiji water. It really is from the islands of Fiji.
You're a liar.
No, I swear to God, it actually is. Drop by drop, Fiji water collects in a sustainable, ancient, artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. But I'm always wondering, Vince, how does Fiji water taste so good?
That's such a good question. And the answer is that as the water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji water its signature soft, smooth taste. You know, yesterday I happened to take my son to California's largest water park, and you know, it's hot out, the sun's beating down, you're carrying a toddler around, you get thirsty.
Sure do.
And you know what I did?
What?
I reached a meaty paw out for that natural artesian spring water that comes only from Fiji.
That's right. That's right. And listen, I enjoy Fiji water on a hot day. I enjoy Fiji water on a cold day. I enjoy Fiji water on a medium day. Just basically whenever I'm thirsty, I reach for a nice bottle of Fiji water.
I know your mouth gets dry when you're trying to do those royalty freestyles sometimes.
It does. It does. I have a very dry mouth. People have commented on that. And I like to wet it with the Fiji water. And here's the thing, Vince. Unlike some other premium bottled water, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's like the best kind of electrolytes. And this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7. Fiji water really is Earth's finest water. And since 2022, its 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles have been produced in 100% recycled plastic. So you can feel proud of your choice in bottled water.
Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office.
It's not just water, it's Fiji water.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. All right. Hope you enjoyed those ads, whatever they were. Raytheon.
Hey, America Online.
America Online 8.0. Now we have it's Redial. Finally ready. It's finally ready to go. So after meeting Waylon, Bubbles is doing his caper. And of all the capers we've seen so far, this is my absolute favorite one. He is, it's like the most cartoony.
Yeah, it's the most, I was going to say he's like the Wile E. Coyote Omar, or like,
yes.
It's like if Omar was a Looney Tunes. I guess I'm relating everything to Looney Tunes in this episode.
No, but Looney Tunes, is, I think, is correct. That yeah. It is very Looney Tunes. I mean, he is on the roof of the towers or wherever. He's on some roof. And he has a fishing line and a fishing hook that he
amazing uses. Choice for this guy to like be practicing his shitty rapping while this is happening.
Yeah.
As I wake up in the morning and get out of my bed, I'm thinking about the people I grew up with, long dead, the brothers I grew up with, locked up, freestyling off the top of my head. You know it's swell. Patti LaBelle, I like her, but Regina Bell is better.
Yeah, this guy's practicing his raps and Bubbles is able to get his stash, which is just a tiny bag.
Doing like the most slapsticky, like comical version of a stunt that is legitimately courting death.
Yes.
And later Johnny is like, did you fish your wish, Bubs? Which implies like this is a thing that they do all right. the time. Like, this is a very common con in the drug trade.
Yeah, I like the idea that it's like, oh no, yeah, we all do this. It's it's why every time you go into a 7-Eleven in the projects in West Baltimore, they have like a fishing line and hook just in case you need it for whatever reason. It's kind of like those glass roses that they would sell that it's like, this is for crack pipes. So, Bubbles, they play it in this way where it's like, oh, this is a hilarious way to steal drugs. He's able to get it, but then he gets caught at the last possible moment, and he has to run and hide, and you get to see the drug dealers just taking baseball bats to random fiends, and you realize, oh, fuck, yeah, he could have died here. This seems bad.
And I think the guilt, too, of, like, I got someone else beat up over this.
Yeah.
Which is why
yeah.
I think it hurts so much worse when it's fake later. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. It's like there's nothing worse than that moment when he gets back to Johnny and he's like trying to explain to him, like, I almost died over this.
Yeah.
But hey, it worked. So yeah. Fuck yeah. Our drugs.
I nearly got killed behind this cape, you know?
On the game, Buff.
Yeah?
Yo, Bub. This ain't shit.
I'm not high neither.
It's fucking Arm & Hammer. Just been firing bacon soda.
I had some questions about that scene. Like, would there be a guy guarding fake drugs like that? It seems, It seems like baking soda would be something that, you know, it doesn't seem like it would be a big operation like that. That seems like you'd get it from some other dumb junkie that screwed you over or whatever.
Also, I don't fucking know. Again, I don't know if this is realistic or not, but like probably word would spread pretty quick if these guys were just selling baking soda.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah. I had a theory about this, that this is the day of the intramural projects basketball game. So my assumption is that all of the West and East Baltimore dealers are out watching the game. And so you have these like small, like ticky-tack crews showing up and taking random corners. I mean, their corner is essentially an alleyway.
Some off-brand neighbors.
I think that's definitely right, because Stringer would not put up with his people selling
totally
baking soda. Like, no. He would be so mad about it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and I think that's also one of the reasons that like Bubbles is feels a little bit more comfortable, you know, pulling this caper off, because he's like, yeah, these guys are off brand and I'm not, you know, they're a small crew. I'm not worried about it. So that's my assumption, is that like at this point, it's kind of take what you can get. And Bubbles is like, I'm going to do a caper to take it all. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it ends up being fucking baking soda, which, I mean, this is, again, I'm relating this to my own personal experience. But like, there is nothing worse than thinking you're going to get high and waiting to get high and not getting high. It's like, it's the closest I've ever gotten to being like, should I murder someone? And it's always over like $20 too. Mm-hmm. It's like I still think to this very day about this guy who sold me a fake gram of cocaine. Jesus. And I'm like, oh my God, if I ever see that motherfucker, I'm gonna kill him. I won't. But yeah, you know, I'm still mad about it. Like, I look at my life as I'm down $20.
That's right. You never get that.
I should have known that it was fake. But anyways, and you see in Bubble's face that he is very sad about this, because not only is he not high, but the high was also supposed to help with him with the guilt of getting those other fiends baseball batted. So he's feeling pretty bad.
But his bloodstreams are all soapy tasting and alkaline now. So
yeah,
I bet it's really embarrassing if you're like a new freshman fiend.
Yeah,
and you shoot it, you pretend like you're all high, and everyone's like, "That was baking soda, dude."
Yeah, everyone just laughs at you. That was oregano, idiot. Here's the real heroin. Yeah, so Bubbles is also thinking about that interaction with Waylon and decides he's going to go over to his sister's place, I assume, and basically tells her, I'm thinking of getting clean, and they have this lovely little interaction.
No.
I didn't even ask for nothing.
Oh, is that Tasha? You got too pretty, girl.
Go inside, Tosh.
Thinking about getting clean. Again. Just thinking, you know, I ain't got no other place to go. Maybe that ain't right, right? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Wait. Back door only. There's an old sofa in the basement, and I'll throw you down some blankets. Try to come up those stairs and I'm gonna call the police on you. I swear I will.
Man, classic good writing of just like a lived in scene. They're not like, remember last time you said you would get you could tell she doesn't think she should be doing this, but she's going to, she can't help herself. Like, man, what, that's great writing.
I think, and that's a perfect way of putting it, a lived in scene, a scene where the exposition isn't this overbearing, like, the last time you were here, you stole my, you know.
Yeah.
It was just like, I mean, she opens the door and says, no. It's so perfect. Just so much information is communicated in that one part. But she lets him stay. And then the last we see of Bubbles is he is pacing and detoxing in the basement and just plucking his mustache hairs out one by one, which, you know, that can only help for so long.
Yeah.
But
and like, damn, get a book or something, dude. Like,
honestly, yeah, I was thinking that too. I was like, could you throw down a Grisham, maybe? Hey, sister, throw down the Pelican Brief. I need something to do while I detox. So yeah, next, let us finally talk about the game. Yeah, so this is Play the Game. This we start off with, first we see Ronnie Moe, or we hear Ronnie Moe on the wire with Wee Bay, and there's going to be some money exchange that happens. And the detail is kind of running fucking on all cylinders right now. I mean, we got Carve and Herc actually doing their job. You know, this is after, like, what, 8 episodes of every time that they go out to take pictures, they're just complaining about having to do it. They're finally kind of getting into it.
And then he says, like, fuck the wire, and McNulty gets all mad. He's like, oh, it's too easy. It's like, well, you've done that a million times.
Yeah, already. It's like, usually you mean it, asshole. Yeah. But yeah, and one of the ways that they decide, like, okay, well, let's make the best of the situation where we're kind of these, like, playing a bit part in this entire operation. Let's do a crank phone call. And I have a clip of that.
Hello, you make order?
Who is?
You make order. Good yakimi.
What?
Oh, no delivery. You make order, you come get. Good yakimi. Good noodle. Extra ketchup.
Fuck was that?
That was my Korean counterman.
Sounded Chinese.
Like you can fucking tell the difference.
You know what's fucked up? I was like, I thought it sounded Chinese too.
Yeah. I was like, oh, he's clearly doing Chinese.
Also, just for Carver to do like this racist ass character and then be like, you're so racist against Asian people.
That is, that's a peak Herc thing to do, is to, is to be like, man, that's fucked up. That could never be me. So they're doing racist accents. They're getting D on the phone, making sure that they can tell which phone they are using and all that stuff. So they end up putting a wire on that new phone. and so the whole detail is scouting in the pit for a nice little jackup. And they find Wee Bay limping to the towers with his money. And then Carve and Herc jack him up. They find a bag of money. Wee Bay pretends it's not his, and they have no charge. So they have to let him go, but they do take the money. And this is going to be an interesting little storyline between Carve and Herc, because next we see them talking about, well, Herc is asking, how much do you tip at a restaurant? And Carve is like 15%. And then Herc is like, well, some people tip 20%. And it's clear that what he wants to do is like steal a little bit of the money. And Carve mentions, like, hey, you know, they know how much money there is because of what was said on the wire. Like, they have an exact amount. And they end up not doing it. But I thought, like, okay, occasionally this show gets criticized by online leftists as being copaganda, which is something that I think we've talked about on the show a few times and kind of go, like, I don't see it as copaganda. This is a small bit. Tiny, just a little bit copaganda, and they don't actually steal the money. That's kind of...
Yeah, but the reason they don't steal it is because they know there's too high a risk of getting caught.
Yeah, it's not out of principles.
No.
No, of course it's not out of principles, but there is part of me that is like, the fact that... Because then what ends up happening is they bring in the money and there's less of it. And then Daniels finds out.
Right. I think
that's the copaganda.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Daniels isn't like, you do this without cutting me in, I'll fucking nail
you. Yeah. Not in my unit. Stop doing it in my unit. Yeah, that to me... Daniels' character is a little bit copaganda-ish. Yeah, I feel like you can maybe, I can justify it a little bit in that, like, well, Daniels obviously has some dirt on him from before that they keep alluding to. Yeah. So maybe he's like, I can't get in trouble like that anymore. But also part of me is like, yeah, I think he would, I don't know. Yeah, he does.
He's I mean, he's a character that's more about possibility than reality, I think.
Seems like the entire police department, from what I can glean from the news, is either doing bad shit or looking the other way while
exactly
does bad shit. And yeah. Like, I don't know that there's a lot of Boy Scouts in the police like this.
Right, yeah. And it's a little Boy Scoutish, and it also, the idea that Carve and Herc would be, I don't know, forward thinking enough to be like, no, if we steal it, we could get in trouble. I'm like, I don't see it. I feel like most cops would just steal it. And, you know, later they do actually steal some money, but when it's not recorded on the wire.
But that is like, it's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm story where it's like they talk about stealing it, then they don't, and then they lose it.
Yeah. It reminds me actually of, of The Sopranos, when Tony and Adriana are like clearly going to go get some cocaine and then fuck. Mm-hmm. And then they get into the car accident and everyone thinks they fucked. And he's like, might as well have fucked her.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that where it's like, well,
no good deed goes unpunished.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Well, it wasn't a good deed, really.
Yeah, no, it was literally just not doing something illegal.
Yeah.
But yeah, before all that, Carve and Herc are looking around at the projects and notice that everybody is gone. Nobody is at their job. Nobody's working. What happened? And that's when we get to the annual West Side versus East Side basketball game. So to get into this, Avon is coaching the West Side. Prop Joe is coaching the East Side.
I love that they're coaching. Like, they're running like three cone drills all year. And
They're scouting. They literally, like, the cold open is them scouting a prospect for this one game.
Them and scouting this 37-year-old college sophomore.
37-year-old guy who, like, plays in Italy. They're like, all right, fuck yeah, let's do this. And, yeah, it is, like, there's something, I don't know what it is. There's, like, The Wire is really good at taking two people who are natural enemies and putting them in situations where they have to coexist in almost like a neighborly way.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, I want more of that. So you see like Avon and Prop Joe just talking trash. And I have a clip of that.
Hey, yo, what's up, Playboy? How come you wearing that suit, B? For real? It's 85 fucking degrees out here and you trying to be like Pat Riley.
Man, look the part, be the part, motherfucker.
Nigga, please, you walking around with a fake fucking clipboard. You can't even read a playbook. Be for real. Bunch of bitches.
Fake clipboard is very good.
Just the idea that he has a clipboard and you just look on it and he drew a stick figure with titties on it. Like, there's,
he just writes win on it and holds it up to the team.
Just writes win. But yeah, it is, it's cute kind of like watching them working together and then also watching like Bodie and Poot and Herc and Carve all kind of hanging out. And then you realize that this is also the first time that the detail has ever had a visual on Avon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He is the only like picture they have of him is this old boxing picture.
And it's the two guys who have paid the least attention the whole time.
Yes.
Like, who are supposed to figure out who it is.
It's the two people who pay the least amount of attention. And it's also at one point, Daniels gets a call from Herc. And Daniels is like, do you have a visual on him? And Herc is just like, I don't even know what to look for. I have no idea like who it could be. And it's like, well, I would at least guess it. Maybe it's the guy in the suit. Like, I'd be wrong.
Yeah.
But if he was like, I don't know, maybe the guy coaching one of the teams.
Guys.
But the idea that like Herc has seen the picture, he's seen it before. But for him, he's like, nah, can't really tell the difference between people.
Yeah, that's a real moment. That's true.
Because right after that, Sidner shows up and immediately spots Avon. He's just like, yeah, he's that one. He's the guy who looks like that picture we've all been staring at on the, on the board for months.
Also, 30% chance they could have just asked the kids, which one of these guys is Avon? And they would have been like, it's that guy.
Yeah. But then they wouldn't be good police, because good police pretend like they already know everything and do not ask questions. That is what they teach you in good police school. So they finally see him And they, you know, Daniels is like driving over and he's like, oh, I gotta fucking set my eyes on him for the first time. And Daniels and McNulty are having a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of tension between them at this point in the series. And Daniels is explaining why he wants to go follow Avon. And I have a clip.
We should follow him.
Why? He ain't gonna touch drugs or money anywhere you can see him, Lieutenant.
In narcotics, we follow guys. We do it well. We make cases on it. Mount up.
Yeah, but it never works.
I feel like they both have kind of a case here. I think McNulty's right in that, like, he's like, this guy's smart. He's like our Moriarty.
Yeah.
He's the first guy equal to us. And Daniels is like, we follow these guys all the time and they fuck up all the time.
Right.
I think
right.
that's what he thinks. And well, so he's also, still underestimating.
Yeah. I also think there's an element of like, okay, yeah, maybe we're not going to make the case on this, but like, I don't know. We've been having a wire up on this guy for fucking months. Maybe I just want to go get a look at him. Is that all right?
Right. Yeah. I was like, you're kind of spoiling the fun, man. Don't you want to go see this guy?
Totally. Prez Belusky says the exact thing. He's like, you don't even want to see this guy.
You've been on this guy 3 months. Don't you want to get a look at him?
No, Avon Barksdale, if I fell over him in the street. The thing is, I don't need to. We get him by voice alone, and we don't get him.
And McNulty, being kind of the, I don't know, arrogant piece of shit that he is just like, I don't need to see him.
I mean, he's reacting completely
as
like
the wire.
As a hurt little boy. Like, he's justifying it like it's some police tactical decision, but really, he's just like, this wasn't, I didn't discover this, so I don't want to acknowledge
that's 100% it.
Yes,
he didn't discover it. And he was just like, well, I don't want to fucking, that's stupid.
Yeah. Well, if you guys want to do that, sure, I'll be here doing good work.
I don't know if you guys have been in a writer's room, but like every time you like drop a hot joke that makes the whole room laugh and the showrunner's like, well, yeah, but it wouldn't work because of this reason or whatever. Like that's what being a comedy writer is.
You're like, oh, thanks.
Yeah, cool.
I've only been in digital writers' rooms, so those are much worse. Those are like, well, we've decided to cancel the show.
That's just the algorithm screaming, more content now.
Yeah, do more content.
Do more joke.
You need to do
pellets fall out of the ceiling.
Do a video where you're eating food. People love to watch people eat. I love the algorithm, dude. That's a good boss. All right, so it's halftime. Avon and the West Side, they're up 12. And Prop Joe, he famously has a proposition because that's his catchphrase. And he asked Avon to double down. Avon agrees. And then Prop Joe has his own ringer, who is basically just like a And One mixtape fella, which, I mean, here's like, I don't know if you guys enjoy watching And One mixtapes, but I always feel like those are fun to watch, but they usually, those guys don't win the game.
Yeah, it doesn't translate into good basketball. It's more just like,
really, you're just burning a lot of clock.
Yes, exactly, burning a lot of clock and a lot of turnovers. Yeah. A lot of turnovers. Sometimes it's
like,
cool.
Wow, did you see all the cool ball handling tricks that guy did on the way to a terrible fadeaway three-pointer that he clanked
that he
off
missed?
The side of the rim? Yeah.
It looked cool, though.
Also, though, Avon is a little bit too much hubris here of like, we have 12 points, an insurmountable lead.
Yeah, that is true. He does. He acts like the 12-point lead is forever. It is very funny. And also, Avon, we know you can play. We've seen you play basketball.
Get in
Be
there.
In the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That just shows that he's like such a, he's too much of a boss that he's like, I just can't get fucking packed in front of all these people. But still, I think he should have played. They lose. The East Side actually wins the game. And then Avon yells at a ref for not calling a foul, which, I mean, we can all relate to that.
That's a good little moment in there, I thought.
Oh, I love it. I have a clip.
How you gonna not call that?
Look, if you want, I can put time back on the clock, replay it.
You talking about a do-over, baby? Are you talking about a fucking do-over? That's not how the game is played. You can't do that. Fuck, believe this shit, nigga. Talking about doing it again.
Look, I don't want any trouble, okay?
Ain't gonna be no trouble over no ball.
Man, you're supposed to be the ref, right?
Why don't you stand up for your fucking self, you pussy? You can't just let any old motherfucking nigga get in your face. Turn around and walk the fuck away. Ignorant motherfucker.
We cool? Yeah, we cool, baby. You tell your people to come on up here to the park Saturday at noon.
Of course, you come on the west side again, baby. Without a ball, I'm gonna light your ass up.
Hell yeah. That's pure, I mean, Avon. That's not how the game is played, is Avon's whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
Well, yes. It's also, he's just like every overbearing dad in that moment where it's like you've spent your entire life making people deathly afraid of you, but all you really want out of them is for them to stand up to you. So you're like constantly living in this dissonance of they don't have the skills to stand up for themselves the way you want them to. So you just belittle and like yell at them more and make them more scared of you.
I think he just wanted to hurt this guy's feelings. He was just mad.
he was mad he lost the game, and he also was like, you know, now that I'm done coaching this team, I'm going to coach this ref on how to be a tough guy.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, it's like he wanted the ref to be a ref in that moment. Like he wanted to yell at him like he would at a game, but yeah. It's like he's paying that guy. That guy's job is partly like the reason that guy's there is he knows who Avon is. And so thus he's like afraid of him because he has like, cause he could murder that guy.
And, yeah.
I think he's mad when he's like, do you want to do over? Cause he's like, I just want to be able to yell at you because you fucked me over. And right. Now you're doing this shit. Yeah.
I kind of wanted you to kick me out of the game.
I'm trying to save my dignity because I just lost. Like,
yeah.
So like, yeah, he's like yelling at the guy to like not be afraid of him, essentially, when that's like an impossibility.
It's like
a dad.
It's like playing doubles golf with like Kim Jong Un. Like you want to let him win, but you also want to like make it a game. You know, it's like at the end of the day, it is like you gotta let him win or you will die. Like you can't actually yell at Avon, but you can do it in a way where both people continue LARPing as like not a serial murderer who runs the biggest drug dealing empire in West Baltimore. But yeah, so I also really love that, you know, the bet was like he's going to give him $100,000 and they throw a party for the East Side on their turf. And he says like, yo, but, you know, you come on the West Side without a ball, I'm going to light your ass up. And I just like picturing Prop Joe showing up to the West Side. I brought a ball.
Yeah, I want to see the party.
Yeah.
I want to see too. Like Weebe has to wear like a bow tie and serve drinks at it and stuff. Like, it's just so
they
embarrassing.
They want to wear shirts that say East Side rules, West Side rules. It's like, oh, this is so embarrassing. You're lucky that this is a party or else I would murder everyone here. Yeah. So then Daniels follows Avon, but loses him. Avon quickly realizes that people are following him. And the first glimpse we catch, or Daniels catches of Avon, he's doing the Dikembe Mutombo finger wag. Which is that, I mean, that my guess is that's what he was doing, but I don't know. Was that his way of saying rejected?
Just like, I know you, I'm on to you, or whatever.
Yeah.
It just more following me, mister.
This whole sequence, I thought was, outside of the finger wag, was a real waste of everyone's time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it takes way too long, and I'm just like, what is the point of this? Like, he could have just done this right away to them.
Yeah, that's true, because it's not like they can pull him over. Like, it was like his way of saying, like, hey, now I'm going on the other way. You know, it's just like, before you were following me, and now I've passed you.
You're going to have to turn around.
Yeah, you're going to have to do a Yui. Good luck with that. Your car's got a shitty turning radius. I don't know why he's Italian in this. So does a finger wag. Meanwhile, the sub storyline here is that Omar is hiding out and waiting for his moment to pop out and to get Avon. He goes over to Prop Joe and delivers a bunch of drugs that he's been stealing. I think this is the first time we see Omar do the thing where he just shows up at a drug dealing site and they just give him the drugs. And the more I watch it, the more I'm like, this feels unrealistic, but it's so cool that I don't care. you know what I mean?
I think that's Omar's whole thing.
Yeah. Like, it's just like one guy and you guys, like, certainly you have a couple guns at various angles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, man. But yeah, Omar shows up and he just wants a beeper code for, he wants a beeper code for Avon to quote unquote parlay, but obviously that is not what he wants. Instead, what he uses it for is to trick Avon into thinking that WeeBay is paging him. So Avon is over at Orlando's counting money, ordering a cheesesteak, and Omar is outside staking it out. He pages him 911.
He's cheesesteaking it out.
He's cheesesteaking it out. That's right.
That should be the name of this episode.
The cheese stakeout. Yeah. The cheese stakeout stands alone. Then as Avon is outside making his phone call, WeeBay ruins the whole thing by yelling about cheese fries.
Which no one asked for, by the way.
Yeah, no one asked for cheese fries.
Yeah, but who's turning down cheese fries?
Yeah, no one would turn down cheese fries. Never. But also, guardian angel shit when you like cheese fries saves your life. Mm-hmm. And I have a clip of that.
Yeah, cheese fries, baby. I got you some.
I love that cheese fries are the things that saved his life.
That's just something I realized about this scene is Omar's maybe most badass line is, you come at the king, you best not miss. You just did exactly that, man. Like, yeah, you can't really go around saying that when
he immediately came at the king and missed like an episode after. That's a good point. Kind of fucked up his whole game, and he got shot too.
I mean, so he chose the wrong tool for the job. Like, he brought a pistol to like a long range assassination attempt situation, and it's like, that's not,
it does make me wonder, like, y'all know about sniper rifles though, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
like a sniper rifle would have been perfect. I mean, not that you can just easily get a sniper rifle, but I feel like, I don't know, if anyone knows how to get it, Omar knows.
Yeah,
you
think if he can get a sawed-off shotgun, he could get a long gun.
He also could have just waited right next to the door instead of like half a block away.
That's true too. Yeah, and yeah, I mean, it seems like it was good planning and bad planning at the same time, but it didn't work out. And you know, the cheese fries saved his life.
Here's my read on it, is that Omar is feeling a little cocky after just getting the drugs handed over to him.
Yeah.
And so he's like, no matter what, I'm going to be able to kill this
guy. Oh, yeah. He's showing up and like having his back to the stash house. Like, he's obviously a little cocky.
Yeah, no, he's definitely cocky. I mean, he's been, you know, he just killed Stinkum, and he just robbed the pit. And then he was able to take the drugs he robbed and sell it for information on where to kill the next guy he's going to kill. So he is feeling a bit overconfident, which catches up to him in this episode. And that's the end of this storyline and the end of the episode. Let's do a favorite and least favorite or anything that we missed. Vince, do you have a favorite, a least favorite, or something we missed?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, we talked about it. I really liked when Carve and Herc are hanging out with Bodhi and Poot, and they're just broing down. that's really cool. And then least favorite, probably the baking soda, just because I didn't quite understand why that would be baking soda. You explained it fairly well, but in the moment, it didn't work for me. But okay. Yeah,
Colin. Do you have anything?
I was thinking about that. One small thing that I just wanted to point out is when Herc's on the roof and he's like, who brings all these pebbles up on the roof?
Hey, how you figure all these little pebbles get up on top of the roof?
Fucking, how do those pebbles get up there? That is super apt. I have no idea how pebbles get on roofs.
That's a good point. I remember, you're 100% right, because I laughed at that line thinking, what an idiot. And then now that you mention it, I don't know.
I think it's supposed to be dumb, but I don't know how a bunch of pebbles get up on roofs of buildings.
I assume they bring them up in buckets. I don't know. Or why do you put the pebbles on the roof in the first place?
I don't know.
I assume they mix with the asphalt somehow, but they put it in
and
like,
they just
the
get
machine
loose?
Or something? I don't know. Yeah. That's my assumption, but I'm not a roofer, so don't.
I don't know enough about roofs to understand why, but I do know that that's a dumb question. And as soon as I find out the answer, I'm going to pretend like I knew it the whole time. That's how I'm going to do. Yeah, I think just one thing that I realized we missed, there's a brief little Wallace update in which Wallace is, you know, he is getting money from D and he's using it to buy drugs, and Poot finds him, like spots him buying some drugs and realizes that there's some problems. But my favorite scene in this is one we haven't mentioned yet, and it's the one in which Herc and Carve and later McNulty are listening to Poot having phone sex on a payphone. There's something about having phone sex on a payphone that is like, it's really about the love of the, it's not even about your own sexual pleasure, because the only reason to have phone sex, in my opinion, is that you're masturbating to a girl. To you and a girl are like are masturbating, isn't that?
Mm-hmm. Am I crazy? So. I mean, maybe he's just building the tension for later.
I mean, I love that. I love that he's doing it just to build the tension. Like he's like not
Sting. He's like into tantric.
Yeah,
just edging in public.
Is this where we establish Poot as horny?
Oh, like, he's been horny this whole time, but like this was for me, I was like, this is an important moment in establishing his horniness, because this is a horniness level that I think is, I mean, first of all, it's a payphone. Disgusting.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, gross. And second of all, it's like he's out in public talking about wanting to make her look like a glazed donut, which is like, I don't know. I would feel weird. Like, I feel weird, like, kissing my wife if I'm in the back of an Uber.
Yeah. Well, that's gross because like, she's your wife.
Well, right. That's mostly the
wait
reason.
Until you get home, dude. You got all night.
Exactly. So, yeah. And, yeah, I actually have a clip of that phone sex.
Ready, bitch?
Yeah, I'm ready. Want to get on my
hands? Great start.
Like a great big lollipop.
Oh, you suck.
Yeah, no, that's your favorite. I can make that. Yeah.
Like
that. Yeah. Oh, daddy, yeah.
There's no way I'm transcribing this stuff.
I look like a glazed donut.
Just so fucking. He's so horny. And
he's so horny. Ready, bitch?
Yeah, you ready, bitch? That's how he starts off.
And now she like she just answered the phone and he said, "Ready."
Hello, ready, bitch? Oh shit. Okay. Yeah, and do you guys know the rapper Kevin Gates? Are you familiar?
No.
I feel like I just saw that name.
So. Yeah, so Kevin Gates, I just was introduced to him recently on the internet because a series of interviews with him came out in which he just openly is horny. He's like the horniest man in the world. And he's like, I realize he and Poot have this like this thing where I'm like, oh, they're my sexual id in this way that I relate to them so well. And I have a clip of Kevin Gates that just reminds me of Poot.
My dick don't even get hard unless I eat a woman ass, then eat her pussy.
Ooh.
That's just me though. I ain't talking about that swipe the credit card shit. I'm talking about I want to stick my whole tongue in this bitch ass. I want to suck her asshole in my mouth, stick my whole tongue, and then I twirl the bitch.
Just like... I need to listen to this guy's music because this guy, I understand him on a deep, deep level. And, I feel the same way. I feel this, I can't even get hard unless I eat a woman's ass and eat her pussy. You know what I mean, Colin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
sure. Sounds right.
Yeah.
I'm all about female pleasure.
All about female pleasure. Exactly.
Just like Poot.
Yeah.
Just like Poot.
I said, you ready, bitch?
You ready,
for pleasure?
Bitch. Then I twirl the bitch. Yeah, so if I had to give this episode a letter grade, I think, you know what? I think it's a B plus. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Ooh, tough choice, but yeah, I'm going to have to give it a solid B plus.
Solid B plus, all right. Colin, what would you give this episode?
I mean, this is like a seminal episode for more than one reason, of the greatest American television show, I think. We establish like Bub's getting clean. We establish Wallace's problem. Mm-hmm. A lot of big stuff happens. So I got to go B+.
B+. Mm-hmm. All right. Smart. We're giving it a solid B+ episode of The Wire and a solid A+ episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. Colin Crawford, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I would have just talked about The Wire for fun, so this is cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did.
Good
for
thing
money.
You did. Yeah, for a massive paycheck.
For my giant paycheck.
No. Yeah. Yeah. We'll Venmo you
your comically oversized novelty check. That you
I have yes. a proposition for you.
Yeah, I got a proposition for you. Would you do this for free?
Can you pay me for this thing I already did?
Where can people find you on the internet?
Honestly, I'm at Hello Cullen, but. Don't I have enough followers? It's getting annoying. Like, I don't want any more followers. And then you can listen to Football Friends Who Are Gambling, which is my football gambling podcast with my friend Joe McAdams.
Great name.
And it's just us being dickheads. It's the like most cumbersome name we could
think of. I love it though.
Yeah.
And yeah, it'll end when we run out of money, which could be any week now.
Oh shit. I hope you don't run out of money.
I had a good week, actually, so we're back to where we started.
Fuck yeah. Hell yeah. So check out his podcast. Don't follow him on Twitter unless you absolutely have to. Colin Crawford, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Thank
Come
you
back
for
soon.
Having.
Hell yeah. Patreon.com/Frogcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince. We don't have any. We don't have any new ones this week.
Oh man, I was gonna give out so many nicknames.
Isn't that so?
Dingleberry, Cheech,
nope.
Red Card.
you had them ready.
Oh dang! Why? Well, blew the sight unseen.
Yeah, and what's worse is that because we're
Icebox,
banking
this, Lippy.
All right.
Oh, sorry.
Because we're banking these episodes, I realized that it's like people won't hear that we didn't get any this week for weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
So that means we have to go on Twitter and beg again.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, that's what we do best.
That's true. $8 tier, get to that shout out. Go to patreon.com/frogcast. Get the $8 tier. You get your own gangster name, and also you get all the bonus episodes where Vince and I talk about other things like movies and other TV shows that are not The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
So subscribe now. God, we talk a lot about AI bots. That's our favorite. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everybody. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not.
Open up HBO Max and watch The Wire. Palmer B Story, episode 109. Wants to suck my dick. Sucky, fuck my dick. I want to lom inside some bombs. Eating all the cum. Cum. Eat my butt. Thank you.
his life, stealing some guy's drugs. Drugs ain't free, free, boss. All you have to do is ask Omar, play the game, and he will give you free drugs. He'll give you free drugs. Yeah, bitch. Your life. Omar's getting close, and then we.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.